Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, welcoming back Dr. Bill Stork to the show. He is the owner of Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, and always fun to talk with him. And today we're going to zero in a bit on keeping your pets safe over holidays. And, of course, we'll take your other pet care questions as well and love to have you part of the conversation. So join in at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Bill Stork, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Well, good morning, Larry. Good to see you.
You know, last night, I was invited to a Christmas party, and I left right from work to the party, and so got home. It wasn't that bad. It was about 9 o'clock, but when I got home, the lights were, you know, the place was completely dark, and I opened the door, and both of the cats are looking at me, and they're kind of scared, and they're wondering, where the heck have you been? You're normally home at 5 o'clock is what I could imagine them saying to me. And, you know, there are schedule disruptions at this time of year. That's kind of a minor one. But
they don't wear Apple watches, but they can tell time.
Yeah. So does it create problems for pets?
Well, at multiple levels, just kind of broad sweeping statements to make with regard to the holidays. And you touched on one, you know, if not being 4 hours late to feed your cats, hopefully that will be one of the least impactful measures. But stress in general can be ramped up at this time with, you know, your sister's kids coming into town and making all kinds of noise. We encourage people, Larry's got cats, we encourage people to make sure those cats have an escape, a place that they can get to that is away from the commotion. That's one set of considerations. Another big, broad set of considerations is things that can be toxic. And I find that in 2021, people are pretty darn well informed about things like chocolate and especially sugar-free things. Grapes and raisins are high on the list of things that can be toxic. So things toxic are a big, broad set of considerations. And then one of the other things, when Jill asked me about a lead topic for the program that immediately comes to mind, are things that can be obstructive foreign bodies. People bring home puppies that like to chew on things and like to chew things up, and people like to give, Santa Claus likes to bring presents for dogs as well. Just be careful of things that can be fragmented and become obstructive foreign bodies. And one of the things that comes to mind are squeakers. If you give your dog toys with squeakers and you know that those toys can be dismantled, which many of them can be, an obstructive foreign body surgery gets pretty expensive to retrieve a lost squeaker.
Oh man. Well, you mentioned chewing. Let's just go to Bruce and Trevor. Bruce, hi, you've got a question relating to this.
Hi, Doc. Yeah, I was just thinking, this looks like my alley. We just got, our daughter just got a dog, and he's about a year old puppy, I think. And, we're finding out what chew toys not to get only after he destroys them. And, yeah, he tore apart that rabbit that had the squeaker in it. It's like, let's get rid of that. What do you do when you go shopping for toys to make sure?
Yeah, keep it safe. Yeah.
Well, just out of curiosity, you mentioned your daughter just got a puppy that's nearly a year old, which is a whole big set of considerations all by itself, because essentially your daughter adopted a middle school kid. So there's lots of behaviors that are ingrained at this point in time. So to answer your question with regard to chewing, we're okay with big, tough raw hides. I'm assuming that this is a big, tough dog. But what I don't recommend is allowing them to chew on raw hides unsupervised. It's rare, but dogs that are aggressive chewers can take off a chunk of raw hide that can become an esophageal foreign body, which is an emergency in a hurry. One of the things that's the most effective chew toys that can keep even an aggressive chewing dog busy is the Kong, the big rubber Kongs, and they make them in different speeds. They make them red and blue and black that are the toughest versions. And then you may be familiar with these. They have a cavity that you can fill with dog food. You can fill with hard treats, and then you can top them off with canned food, mashed potatoes, yogurt, and even freeze them, which can slow the dogs down. So Kongs are on the list of possibilities. For hundreds of years, dogs have chewed on bones, cow bones. And the 2021 version of that is antlers. And antlers and bones are great. They can keep dogs busy for a long time. They can help scrub their teeth. If there's any veterinary dentists out there, they're saying they can also fracture teeth. Aggressive dogs chewing hard bones can get slab fractures on canines and molars. But circling back to your daughter bringing home a junior high school kid, some of the other things that are vitally important in addition to giving them things to chew on is hooking them up on a leash, gearing up for whatever the temperatures are outside, and going for a big long walk daily, multiple times daily, can be other tools that can help siphon off some of their mental and physical energy.
Yeah, all good tips. Bruce, good luck to you and your daughter and that new puppy. Appreciate your call very much. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. I'll go back to my old cats for a minute, because I'm sure I'm not alone on this. I have a Christmas tree in the living room, and the cats love to chew on the needles. They'll eat the needles, and of course, then they'll throw up.
Well, and thank goodness they do. And also thank goodness, for a lot of different reasons, that it's no longer 1974. Because back in the 70s, Larry, you and I remember when people used to put tinsel on Christmas trees.
Yeah.
And tinsel made one of the gnarliest intestinal foreign bodies for cats, and made for some wicked surgeries. Needles, thankfully, they'll chew on them and turn around and vomit them up, which becomes hopefully more of a carpet cleaning issue than a medical issue for the cat.
Yeah, it's good when they do it on the hardwood floor part of the house, for sure. Well, how bad is it to keep your pets away from people food?
In increments, and this is the ultimate case of do what I say and not what I do, because at our house, our dogs are the pre-cleaning cycle of our dishwasher. But I'm also very careful that I don't put a lot of fat in front of them. One of the most dangerous things that your dog can take in, especially your dog can take in, is excessive amounts of fat. And fat can trigger a condition called pancreatitis. At the worst, which can cause vomiting, which can cause diarrhea, which can cause dogs to get really sick. And at the very least, if you overdo it on food components, people food that they're not used to getting, it can set up a case of some loose stool at the very least. So like a lot of things, in moderation, and that's okay. You also have to take into consideration the behavioral aspect of it. Because Dogs know exactly when our fork hits the plate and supper is done. And that's time for us to get up and give them the plates so they can clean them off.
Dr. Bill Stork, our guest from Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. You know, just this whole business of eating food off the table, well, the food off the table typically, other than fats, as you just pointed out, is probably not dangerous to them. But there are, what about plants? There are some plants that we might have during the holiday season that could create problems for dogs or cats.
There sure are. And excuse me if I can't regurgitate my plant terminology, but rubber tree plants are on the list of things that can come inside. And when dogs chew on them, it can be a really dramatic localized irritant. They'll hypersalivate. But the plant that lots of people think about at Christmas time is a poinsettias. To be cautious with poinsettias, make sure you get them far out of reach. And cats and lilies, we think of lilies at Easter time. I don't know if lilies come around at Christmas time or not, but if they do, keep them far away from your cats, because just a little bit goes a long way, and lilies are really dangerous to cats.
And there's a list online, I think, somewhere of plants that can be dangerous to cats or dogs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Aaron emailed to ask if dogs really need coats and sweaters when outdoors.
Well, I guess the best answer to that would be it depends. I'm sitting across the street from a little miniature pincher appropriately named Havoc, who won't go outside under any circumstance at any time of the year unless he is fully dressed. So there, of course, is the fashion consideration at work here. Then there's the breed and climate consideration and how long it is that they're going to be out there. And this time of year, we'll have people come home with Chihuahua puppies and the like, and we stand across the exam room table and explain to them how they really need to house train that dog to go outside while it's 8 degrees below zero and the wind is blowing. And for small dogs without a lot of reserves, then, yeah, an insulative and a wind-breaking layer, I think, is going to be pretty important. One of the things that I see being an issue when we really get into the teeth of winter are paws. And there's several different things about the climate that can be irritating to dogs and their paws. I've got an Australian Shepherd Blue Heeler that was born in Wyoming. They don't get much tougher, but when the pavement is zero, it's really difficult for their paws to be on the pavement for any periods of time. Also, people have to salt their sidewalks and parking lots to keep them from tripping and falling, and salt in between the toes can be very irritating. But the only thing I found that can be more irritating than salt between the paws is booties on dogs. Almost none of them will tolerate it. So if you really wanted to be proactive and condition your dog to tolerate wearing boots, that could go a long way. And circling back to answer your question more directly with regard to coats and sweaters and things like that, you know, the dogs with sparser hair coats, if you want them to be outside for an extended period of time on a cold day, then yeah, it could very much come in handy.
Make for a pleasant experience for the dog and for you, probably.
Yeah, well, on the flip side is, if you're looking to hasten their potty training, they may get back inside a lot quicker.
Dr. Bill Stork from the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, our guest today. Oh, man. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at your pet's health on the show today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dr. Bill Storick, owner and operator of Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. Always great to have him stop by. Again, you can join us 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Larry in Marquesan. Larry, thanks for calling.
Hey, Bill, thank you for taking my call. And I have a Jack Russell Terrier that had a stroke about 10 days ago. It was falling down and spinning around. I picked it up and kept it from shaking, and it came out of it. And I've been giving it 20 milligrams of baby aspirin and 13 grams of Xarelto since then. Is that okay, what I'm doing?
And did you get those prescriptions for your from your veterinarian, Larry?
No, I take it too.
Okay. All right. And this episode lasted for, I always ask clients, well, how long did it seem to last? And the appropriate answer would be about 3.5 hours, because when your dog is going through something like that, it seems like an eternity. But do you have a sense how long it lasted?
For about a minute or two at the most.
And then when it was over, did he seem to be back to normal? Was he navigating? Was he responsive? Did he know where he was?
Yes.
Okay. There's kind of a short list of neurologic episodes that can take place with dogs. And the fact that it occurred, according to your description, and then it resolved, almost by definition, is a seizure, which is an erratic electrical event in your dog's brain, which as compared to a stroke, which is an event in your dog's central nervous system that prevents him from having blood supply. So you're thinking aspirin and giving it, you're thinking stroke and giving it aspirin, which I would not encourage you to do for a couple of reasons. One of which is, aspirin is better at causing ulcers and causing kidney failure in dogs than it is as an anticoagulant, which is what you're thinking about. So what I would recommend that you do is mark it on the calendar, how long it lasts, what took place. And if you see another one, then get him to your veterinarian to be worked up and medicated for a seizure disorder.
What about Xarelto? He mentioned Xarelto.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I don't know the generic drug of Xarelto. But in any event, I would monitor the situation. And as I say, if it happens again, then have him worked up for a seizure disorder.
Sounds good. Larry, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Samantha in Whitehall. Hi, Samantha.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have a cat that's, 11 years old, but she's never liked being in a carrier when I take her to the vet. Now, what can I do to kind of ease her when she has to go to the vet for any reason, that she won't be so, you know, nervous? She kind of, sometimes she'll hide under the bed, she'll scratch me, and it's just like, you know, with her back claws, because she has no front claws, but it's like she just, everything to get away when she's got to go to the vet. So I'll take my answer off air. Thank you.
Oh, you bet, Samantha. Thanks for asking that question. The first thing that I would do is, wherever it is that you keep that carrier, I would bring the carrier up to the main body of the house, so it becomes furniture, just like your cat tree or the litter box or any other part of the cat's furniture. I would put some bedding in it from the house that is familiar to her, so that she can go in there willingly at times. If she likes treats, I'd put some treats in there. If she likes food, I'd put some food in there, so that she starts going in there on her own. Then you can put a blanket over the top of that carrier so that one, she's used to the blanket being over the carrier, over the top of the carrier all the time. And when you go to the veterinarian, and also your veterinarian is going to have a spray, a pheromone spray called Feel-Away. And Feel-Away is facial pheromone that is a nice calming pheromone, which if you had told me 25 years ago, I'd be talking about cat pheromones. I would not have believed it, but we have found them to be an excellent tool. The other thing that you can do is instead of putting your cat in the carrier and taking it to the veterinarian, put your cat in the carrier, take it to the car, the end of the driveway, turn around, come back home, open up the carrier and give it a treat. Essentially counter conditioning your cat to the carrier so that they learn that good things can happen.
All good tips, for sure. But you know what? I don't leave the carriers out all year round. But yeah, I know when I'll a month before I've got an appointment with a vet, I will get the carrier out and do exactly as you say. And it's amazing, the cats go in and out all the time. It makes it a little easier to get them in. My carrier also, by the way, can open from the front, but it also can open from the top.
And
it's a lot.
That's an excellent point, Larry, because one of the things that we'll do when they get to the veterinarian is, you know, cats don't necessarily want to come out. And why would they? It's not home. It smells different. It sounds different. And it looks different. In which case, if you have a carrier that the top lifts off of nicely without a lot of commotion, we can access the cat and we can use the bottom of the carrier for their physical exam.
Yeah, there you go. Linda in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Okay, I've got a cat, I think it's on a Mediterranean diet. he's 3 years old, but I'm just wondering if it's okay for him to eat greens like spinach and arugula and those types of things. He loves greens. I'll be making a salad. He'll steal leaves off, and I hoping that's okay for him to eat that type of diet.
Yeah.
Yes, not a problem. And I'm assuming that this is a supplement to his diet. We've seen cats eat some of the strangest things. I've known cats that were crazy for Cheetos and potato chips, which arugula is a heck of a lot better option. So long as, when you mention a Mediterranean diet, if you look in your cat's mouth, that mouth is specifically designed to catch and eat meat. And that needs to be at the basis of your cat's diet. And you didn't ask specifically about this, but if ever you were looking to assemble a home-cooked diet, there's a wonderful website called Balance It. And that website is a really nice plug and chug for those who want to assemble a home-cooked diet for their cats or dogs. So
there we go.
Little lettuce now and then, no problem.
No problem. And what's the name of that site again, that website?
Balance It.
Balance It. Okay.
Yep.
There you go, Linda. Thank you so much. Margot in Leola Township emailed to ask if it's safe to give raw venison bones to dogs.
Well, it's safe to give raw venison bones to dogs so long as they haven't been sitting out at room temperature for extended periods of time so that they could grow bacteria that could be upsetting to their GI tract. So contamination, in short, could make raw venison bones an issue. If they've been refrigerated, if they've been frozen, no problem. And then back to what it is I said on the front end is that dogs have been chewing on bones since there were dogs and bones, but there's always a possibility of a slab fracture. One of the people we gravitate to in the field of veterinary dentistry, Dr. Chris Schneider at the University of Wisconsin College of Veterinary Medicine is, will say, don't give your dog anything to chew on that you wouldn't hit yourself in the knee with.
Huh. Oh, okay. Well, he's not worried about getting put out of business, I don't think. I don't imagine.
Yeah. he's set in that regard. And as I say, many of us do. It's great in many senses. There's a risk.
You know, I'm wondering, I'm suddenly blanking on the infamous deer disease that's in the state.
CWD.
Yeah. CWD is, you know, if you gave a bone that might have CWD in it, would...
Well, CWD is a prion, and it is specifically isolated to the central nervous system, in which case risk is quite low. And if you press me to the boards and ask me if CWD can infect dogs, I would have to plead the fifth. I do not know.
Okay. We have Dennis from Two Rivers online now. Let's go there. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. Something I noticed with one of my neighbors is when they go out for a walk with their dog, they also had their cat in a stroller that had a net around it. So that might be a way of taking a cat out that isn't always linked with going to a vet.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's perfect input. And we see a few of those around town as well. And, man, if I'm a cat, what a way to go.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. Good idea, Dennis. Thanks for calling. Sarah in Madison. We'll go to you now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, I was just calling. I have a question about a seven-month-old kitten that I have.
Okay.
He had some, just very dry coughing with occasional panting, and he's been seen by the vet several times. We've done a bunch of chest x-rays, and they determined that it was asthma or lungworm, but we treated him for lungworm, and that really did seem to clear his lungs up, but not completely. And so we gave him some prednisone. But he's still even at the end of the prednisone, and he also gets revolution for another 3 months, is still having some intermittent, just odd, dry coughing and hacking. And I don't know if there's anything else I need to be doing at this point.
It sounds as if you're getting some excellent care. And what I will tell you is a bit of a spiel that I will share with our clients as well. And that is, respiratory issues in cats, especially respiratory issues in young cats, can be really, really tenacious and really, really chronic. And it can be multifactorial. There's a number of viruses, a number of bacteria, a number of parasites. Your cat was treated for lung worm. And when they resorted to the prednisone, what that was aimed at is reducing the inflammation in the upper respiratory tract. In which case, these things can be really, really tenacious. And we have had clients who have gone all the way to Temple. They've taken their cats to the University of Wisconsin and done bronchoalveolar lavages, which is really aggressive diagnostic technique, MRIs, treated them with antivirals. And there are times when we're not able to completely and totally resolve all respiratory symptoms in cats.
But it sounds like the procedures and what's going on for Sarah's cat is correct, as you say. And
yeah, it sounds as if they've left no stone unturned.
Okay. There you go, Sarah. Thank you. Bill in Black River Falls, on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, good morning. I got a Maltese toy poodle cross. Maybe it's a miniature poodle cross. Anyway, he's a barker, and he was picked up as a stray down, as a matter of fact, in Dane County, and he was abandoned. That's his problem. He barks. But wife wants to get a bark collar. I won't do that. Got any suggestions?
You boy. How Bill? How old is your Maltese toy poodle cross?
Well, they estimated when we got him at the shelter, so I'm thinking about five. Okay. And I got a squirt bottle with water, and I squirt him in the butt, but now he thinks that's playtime.
Yeah, boy, and I take it that your dog, I call these dogs ones that bark at oxygen. Oftentimes, you know, they'll bark at people walking by on the street. They'll bark at other animals that they see outside. They'll bark at the wind. They'll bark at the rain. And I'm going to answer as if your dog is one of those dogs that has a very low threshold of barking at things. And you're swimming upstream because my guess is that this has been, you know, it may have even been why the dog was surrendered to a rescue in the first place. And when we seek to conquer these issues, we have to back all the way out and try and address anything and everything that can potentially help us out. And it all starts with using up this dog's mental and using up this dog's physical energy. And up in Black River Falls, I've heard that you guys have winter, in which case going out on extensive long walks, and this is something that I've talked about for a number of conditions on this show, but long walks can go a long way because you're not only mentally but also physically exhausting the dog. A previous caller was asking about things to chew on for their big dog that can shred a Michelin tire. Well, different set of considerations with a Maltese and toy poodle, but they also make those Kongs that are smaller for smaller dogs. So that's another thing that they can work on mentally. Food distribution items like slow and balls that distribute their food that can keep them occupied can be of help as well. And then if you're inside Black River Falls in the middle of wintertime in Wisconsin, and if the dog likes to fetch or can be trained to fetch, that's the kind of thing that can use up some of the dog's energy. So you get the idea of we're trying to use up a lot of the dog's energy. That can go a long way. If it's hard to identify what it is they're barking at, then it makes it very difficult to counter condition them. But if I can dispense with a succinct piece of advice, it is, you know, like kids, get them to do what you want them to do right before they're going to do what you want them not to do. So actively training him to sit, to down, and then reward him for that are things that can help. But this is going to be an ongoing challenge that can take a while. And the other thing that I will mention is your response to a very large extent will dictate his. If you respond by yelling at him and telling him not to, it's one, human nature, but two, it will absolutely perpetuate the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't holler at him. In other words, when he does.
And it's hard. And it's hard not to. Yeah. Bill, don't get us wrong. That's not critical by any stretch of the imagination, but it can make it worse. It will make it worse.
So instead, offer a fetch or something else to distract the dog and get him on to doing something else. Yeah.
For hours and hours a day.
Good luck, Bill. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or email us to ideas@WPR.org. Mary emailed to ask why her cat licks plastic bins like Rubbermaid containers, usually an edge. Is she attracted to whatever residues on the surface of these containers, or is it to the edge and whatever stimulation that gives to her tongue, or maybe something else?
Goodness gracious, man. If I can get that question figured out. You know, I talked earlier of how cats can eat some of the strangest things. We've seen a number of cats who will eat plastic bags, and they will go out of their way to eat plastic bags. And this I'm going to put in that same set of considerations, cats that will lick edges of things. And my answer is maybe it's something that they're getting out of licking at it. More likely, I think it's a bit of a soothing issue. And to answer that, you know, I don't think it has to be detrimental. Some cats will, their version of that will to lick themselves, to hyper groom perpetually. One of the ways I will answer that question is to take some steps back and look at your cat's environment, because environment can have a tremendous effect on your cat's behavior. And things to take into consideration: availability of and proximity of litter boxes, cat trees, climbs, hides, vertical spaces. The guy on TV named Jackson Galaxy, that he has a book about features that you can incorporate into your house that can keep your cat occupied, that is just fantastic. He is really solid.
Jackson Galaxy.
Jackson Galaxy, yeah. Other things that come to mind with regard to cats, since you emailed that question, we don't have the opportunity to ask about age and medical conditions, because when we see a behavioral situation, we always take a couple steps back and ask if it could be associated with any sort of a medical condition, like dental health, appetite, water consumption, and things like that. I made the assumption that this is a healthy cat that's been doing this for a good long time.
Dr. Bill Stork, our guest today as we talk your pet's health. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your pet's health with our guest, Dr. Bill Stork, Larry Mueller here. Lots of callers online right now. You can email us to ideas@wpr.org if you would like to do that, or call. Well, you'll get a busy signal right at the moment, but the number is 800-642-1234. Tanya in Stevens Point, we'll go to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
So I have an old dog. She's got three legs. She's a large breed dog. And she's just so old at this point and having a hard time moving. I do give her glucosamine and MSM and echinacea. But what can I give her for pain? I know you're supposed to go to the vet and all this other stuff, but there's just really no way to get her to the vet at this point. Is there anything safe I can give her for pain?
Well, I'm glad that you asked rather than just resorting to human products. We mentioned on the air previously, there was a day when we would say, oh, just give her a baby aspirin. And what we've found out over the years is that's not the best choice for aging dogs. And if your dog hasn't been to a veterinarian for a while, it's going to be a little bit difficult for us to be able to help. If you have a mobile veterinarian in the area, that, of course, would be one option to take into consideration. If you have a friend or a family member that can help you get the dog to a veterinarian, there are certainly some things that we can do to help with pain. There are, when you mention large dogs, there's an anti-inflammatory called meloxicam that can help these guys be more comfortable. And the way I've come to phrase it recently is that I can't make them stronger. I can't make them more agile. If I could, I would take it myself. But I can just help them be more comfortable frequently. And there's a neuropathic pain reliever that we use in these guys sometimes when it is appropriate, called gabapentin, all of which can help. But as far as are there things that you can pull down off the shelf at home, the glucosamine, the MSM, those things, fish oil, all of those things can be incrementally beneficial. But when you describe an old dog with three legs, I really feel we need to go with the bigger guns.
Okay. All right. There you go. Good luck, Tanya. Thank you for calling. Dan in Poplar, on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Thanks a lot for the call, Larry.
Sure.
I have a problem that... Well, we have a problem that we've been struggling with here for the last 4 months. We have a 9-month-old golden retriever pup. He's about 60 pounds now. And he has, I would say he has anywhere from near diarrhea to very loose stools. He's had them ever since we've had the pup. We got it at 3 months old. And he's fine all day. In fact, he has almost what I'd call normal during the day, once a day, but at night he goes about 4 or 5 times a night, and it's always loose at night. And I don't really know what to do about it. We've had him on the same food now for the last 3 months. It's called sensitive stomach and skin food. And so far, nothing else has worked. So I'm wondering what to do.
Okay. This is another one that's going to be pretty hard for us to get under control by remote control. If you haven't had a stool sample or even multiple stool samples run on him, that's going to be step one, because parasites are squarely on the list of possibilities for the dog with that kind of perpetual loose stool. So that's step one. And the other questions that we will ask about a dog like this, if it were in our exam room, of course, is overall, is this dog at an appropriate weight, at an appropriate body condition? Is he gaining weight the way we would expect him to? If we had a dog that had loose stool for that long, we'd probably also be do blood work on him to check liver enzymes, kidney enzymes, and blood proteins. As perpetual as this has been, you're not likely going to be able to resolve it with food and diet moderations. This one's going to take some testing and diagnostics to get it under control. And then they can still be a challenge.
Yeah. There you go, Dan. Thank you for calling. You need to make an appointment with the vet. Susan in Superior, on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. So we have a cat who's about 18 years old. And in the last couple of years, he has his food in his litter box on the first floor, and then he has to go upstairs to get to his sleeping area, which is usually with us. And there's about 14 stairs. It's not too hard, but in the last couple of years, he'll do those stairs. He'll get to the top of the stairs, and then he'll start yowling. And sometimes he bounds up the stairs like a young kitten. Other times he goes more slowly. We've had him to the vet. He's been tested and examined. There's nothing that they can find wrong. We've tried giving him gabapentin, thinking that it's, you know, some kind of pain, and we could relieve it that way. But he's an extremely fussy eater, and as soon as you put that medication on his food, he walks away from the food. So we're just we don't yell at him, but I'm just wondering, is there anything, any way of explaining this or anything that we might do to relieve whatever anxiety or issues he's having with those stairs?
Sure. And the gabapentin is a tool that we use fairly frequently. When he's not going up and down the stairs, does he seem to be oriented otherwise? He doesn't get his days and nights mixed up or anything to that effect.
Nope, he seems in pretty good shape.
Okay. Well, kind of like my in-laws, as cats age, some of the things that we will do to attempt to help them out is to modify their environment, and however many floors of the house your cat lives on, I would recommend that you have all of the things that he needs available on each floor, including litter and bedding and food and water, so that he doesn't have to go up and down the stairs to get everything that he needs.
Yeah, it's probably a pretty good idea, Susan. Give that a try. And, you know, there's an 18-year-old cat. Not that you can't be an old cat and get along just fine. Here we are, living proof of it, Bill. The idea of possibly cognitive changes certainly would come to mind.
Is absolutely the case, and that's what my recommendation is based on, is making things as simple and as easily accessible as they possibly can. You know, because I know that the problem that you described is that he'll have a hard time going up those stairs, but proportionately speaking, him going up those stairs is going to be about like me trying to jump on the roof of my house. That's a big step for an old guy.
Yeah, there we go. Join in, 800-642-34. Email to ideas@wpr.org. We have some more callers online, but a question from Bill in Green Bay, I think, is up next. So let's go there. Bill, thank you for calling. What's that? Oh, I guess Bill's not quite ready yet. So I want to ask.
Hello.
Are you there, Bill?
Yes, I am. Barry, I'm calling from Green Bay. I have a 5-year-old Tisand that 2 months ago developed hip dysplasia. I did take him to the vet to get a confirmation on that. He had surgery once this year for neuterization, and it took a while for him to get over that. I'm trying to see if my approach by using a pet chiropractor is okay at this point. He used to be fast. He's very slow now, but he misses going out to see all the people. And but we have to limit that because he just can't walk that far anymore.
Oh, but, man. That is heartbreaking to hear of such a young dog with such a dramatic condition. And my answer is that this may, especially at this young of an age, may come to involve some pretty dramatic surgical procedures. And thankfully, a Keyshond is a smaller dog, in which case a procedure called a FHO or a femoral head osteotomy could be in his best interest. And essentially what that surgery involves is removing the head and neck of his femur, so that it's, you no longer have that bone on bone interaction that's causing him discomfort. And thankfully, dogs are quadrupeds with big heads, and they only bear in the vicinity of 20 to 25% of their total body weight on their back legs anyway. So we can do those procedures and to help them out. If money were absolutely no issue, there are surgeons who will do total hip replacements on these dogs, and it's a big procedure with a long recovery, but they can do very well on the other side. But that's going to cost you approximately the value of a good used car per hip.
Boy, it's a lot of money. Bill, I wish we had better news for you. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Monica in Manitowoc, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Are you there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was calling, I have a approximately 5-year-old rescued heeler. I've had her for about 4 years now. And she has come a long way since I rescued her, as far as being very attached to me. And, you know, kind of that protective around strangers and such. However, I am expecting a baby in February, and I'm wondering if you had any advice on how to get the house ready and her prepared for when baby comes home.
Oh, lots to think about there, and I'm going to give Dr. Bill a little chance to think about it and come up with some answers. So, Monica, you stay with us, and Kay in Berlin, you stay with us, and everybody else stay with us. We're going to take a quick look at the news here. But you can join in right now if you want. There's a couple of open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Bill Stork of Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic will be with us right up till 12:30. So we'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at your pet's health on the show today, Larry Mueller here, our guest, Dr. Bill Stork, owner of Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, also the author of three very entertaining books as well, by the way. It's always great to have him stop by. Lots of callers online. Monica was on right just before the news, and she's from Manitowoc, and has a dog, and will be introducing the dog to a new baby in February, and wants to know what she can do to prepare the dog.
Well, first of all, congratulations on both the impending birth and on having a 5-year-old blue heeler. And I'll answer that question in a number of different ways. The first of which is, you can get to us by email at the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic website. And if you do that, I can send you a link to a video, because our behavioral staff here at the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic has done a seminar over the years. We haven't been able to do it in the last couple of years on exactly this topic. We called it "And Baby Makes Five." So send an email to the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, and I'll hook you up with that video. Second of all, from the standpoint of the dog, you have a very busy, very purpose-driven, athletic, intelligent, and loyal dog on your hands, and which you have found out over the last several years. And it sounds like you've done some wonderful with the dog, but just make sure that things stay regular for the dog. And it seems like all I ever talk about is taking your dog for a walk. And I apologize for the redundancy in there, but it also speaks to the value of it. Here comes winter, and it's just as or even more important to keep the dog busy. Specifically with regard to the impending baby, keep things positive. And bedding, for example, baby's bedding, present that to your dog and make it a very positive experience. Reward your dog, give the dog treats. The baby's room, the baby's crib, the baby's area, all of the places that the baby is going to be, make sure you go out of your way to do positive things. And those positive things can be treats, rewards, Kongs, food, and praise in the presence of the dog and the areas that the baby is going to occupy. So that's the shortest answer I could come up with without spending the entire rest of the half an hour on the topic. But the video will help quite a bit, and I'm happy to send it to you.
Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, that's the place. Thank you, Monica, for that question. Kay in Berlin, on to you now. Hi, Kay.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have an 8-year-old Mastiff mix. He's 120 pounds, and we just had him to the vet for his annual checkup and his shots. But he has an anal gland problem. They fill up every so often, and we get the butt scoops into the carpet, you know, and of course we take him to the vet, and it's a fight every time. We were only able to do one anal gland yesterday, and they want me to try to learn how to do it at home. And is there some kind of food or something that maybe I could give him that would help?
According to the internet, canned pumpkin will help any gastrointestinal issue that's ever befallen a dog, but that's not necessarily the case. So to answer your question specifically, are there food things that can help? Well, in theory, yes. Anything that will bulk up the dog's stool can hopefully help express the material that accumulates in a dog's anal gland. I don't have a great deal of confidence in dietary manipulation being able to help express a tenacious anal gland. And the good news is, you know, I'm confident there are YouTube videos out there on how to express a dog's anal glands. It's not, as they say, brain surgery. It is a bit distasteful. You want to make sure you have personal protection, in starting with gloves and lube when you do it. But the good news is, it's not life-threatening. His overall health and well-being is not in as much danger as your carpet. So things that help bulk up the stool can help. There is a commercial product called Glandex that can help. Some think that it helps a little bit, but to a 120-pound dog, it would take a lot of it.
Yeah, take a lot of it. There you go, Kay. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Jim in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to hear your opinion about declawing the young cats. And I know that there's two sides of this argument. What bothers me is, we inherited some feral cats. They were young, but we could not keep them inside the house. It was hard. And I also had two red cardinals, male, female. And one day I had the tragic thing to see the female had been gotten to by one of our cats. So at one time we did declaw them. We were told not to, so we didn't do it. And I just see them as being such a danger to birds that is the argument that, I guess I fall into it, that they should be declawed. And, of course, I think when they're young. And I'd just like to hear your opinion about that.
Yeah, that's a big topic that has evolved over the years. And there was a time when we, as in veterinarians, would talk about routinely declawing young cats when they came into the clinic, and mostly, almost entirely, we would consider declawing indoor cats for the sake of preserving carpet and couches. But over the years, we've come to realize that declawing cats is not declawing cats. That's 10 amputations. And hold out your hand and imagine having the last digit on your hand surgically removed. It's quite painful for the cats at the time of the surgery, no matter how we do it, with regard to anesthesia and pain relief and lasers and whatever else we use, in addition to the fact that those claws play a very crucial role in how cats interact with their environment. And when they can't extend their claws and scratch appropriate things, like scratching posts and scratching trees inside, it has a dramatic effect on their behavior. It can have, and I know you're asking about outdoor cats, but So I'm answering a different question than what you asked, but I'll get to the one that you did ask. With regard to cats on the inside, it can affect their litter box behavior. A previous caller mentioned a cat that had some aggression issues. Declawing cats can also lead to behavioral and aggression issues as well. With regard to declawing an outdoor cat, I would never, because those claws are how it is that an outdoor cat survives in their environment. And, you know, it's a tough go when it's cats versus birds, but looking for a way to say it diplomatically, that is the cycle of life in the wild.
Yeah, and even putting a bell on the collar doesn't typically. Cats learn that cats that hunt birds learn how to sneak up and not ring that bell.
And I assure you, with or without claws, if those cats are skilled enough to catch birds, they will do it with claws or without them.
Yeah. There you go, Jim. Thank you very much for calling. Mark in Park Falls, your turn now. Hi, Mark.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I've got a 7-year-old Springer Spaniel, 2 other Springer Spaniels. I've got a skin condition on my 7-year-old that developed about a year ago, grew into actually an infected rash. He's got hot spots or regular nickel to dime size spots, mostly on the top of his body. And I've been to the vet and gotten medication twice, 2 different vets. They don't really talk much about the end game or the cure for the problem. They say he could be on medication for the rest of his life. It's a type of penicillin or something like that, amoxicillin, whatever it is. What's the end game on something like this? Is there a cure? Is there anything? Is it something logical?
Well, these are the things that have a tendency to be more managed than cured. And the fact that you mentioned that it's been going on for quite a long period of time and wants to reoccur, then, yeah, it's a condition that's more likely that we're going to figure out how we can manage it. And what we look to try and accomplish, you mentioned penicillin and antibiotics. We try and use tools, drugs, that will get the skin quieted down, get the infections under control, and prevent the dogs from doing the self-mutilation, the scratching and itching that are resulting in the infection. So the end game is to get things cleared up, the infectious component of this cleared up, and then finding one of several drugs that will help prevent itching and scratching and prevent the hot spots in the first place. And they're challenging cases. We deal with them every day.
Mark, good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Wendy in Oshkosh, on to you. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. Good show, Larry.
Thank you.
I just wanted to give some encouragement for the caller that called about the dog that has the anal gland problems. This is an issue I've had to deal with my own dog, and it gets really expensive going in every time to have that done professionally. There's some really good YouTube videos out there. You can do it from the outside. You don't actually have to go inside the dog to do it. And what I found, it's just one gland on my dog. And we've been doing this for a couple years now. He actually, he knows what's going to happen. We go get the gloves. We get the eye protection and everything. And he's generally very grateful once it's done. You know, it was a little bit challenging in the beginning, but we have our system down. So, I mean, people can do this at home. And, yeah, it's disgusting. But your dog will be grateful for a couple weeks until, you know, you have to do it again.
Yeah. Wendy, thanks so much for calling. It was a good call, isn't it, Dr. Bell?
You bet. Don't forget rain gear. Eye protection, gloves, and rain gear can come in handy because the previous caller had a mastiff, so this could get sloppy.
Yeah. Wendy, thank you very much for calling. You could join in too, 800-642-1234. Cindy emailed to ask about a fungal infection called blastomycosis. I think she meant blastomycosis. Maybe I'm wrong. They have a 12-year-old dog who whose overall health is good, diagnosed with this condition, confirmed by urine analysis a couple weeks ago, and they are medicating him according to the vet instructions. Any information about blast or blastomycosis would be appreciated.
Boy, it's not frequently seen, but when we do, it is wicked, mean, and nasty. And I'm encouraged by the fact that your dog is in otherwise good health. Blastomycosis is a fungal organism that has a tendency to reside in low-lying, marshy, wet soil, rotting wood, things like that. It exists in a spore form, and it is taken into the animal's body in a respiratory fashion. And there it can sit in the lungs for days, weeks, months. And eventually, it will disseminate, and it can disseminate to the paws. I once upon a time saw a dog that had draining tracts in its paws. It can disseminate to its eyes. It can disseminate to a prostate gland. So it's a very opportunistic organism. But it sounds as if you are treating early and aggressively. And what's difficult for us to know is exactly what's the appropriate endpoint for treatment. And my answer is usually a long time. I don't think I've ever treated a dog for blasto less than six weeks. And we have treated them for as long as 3 to 4 months at a time. But if you're into it a couple of weeks, he's eating and drinking, not coughing too badly, then you have an excellent opportunity at a good outcome here.
Yeah. I had it myself, and it is not fun to have the human version of it. I can tell you that for free. It was not fun at all. Bonnie emailed. Her vet recommended Cosequin for her senior arthritic cat. She gives it to her several times a week, or she can develop diarrhea. Also, her male cat has loose stools, like the listener's golden lab pup. He was treated for worms and then put on Hill's GI Biome dry food, which has bacteria to help the gut. No problems anymore, and his coat is lustrous.
Excellent.
Yeah.
We're always grateful to get stool situations under control, especially that poor person with the golden retriever that's getting up 3 or 4 times a night.
Oh. And let's take another call here. Mary in Ashland. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I've got a 3-month-old, I swear, possessed cat. And whenever I go to pet her or play with her, she likes to sink her claws in and try to bite me. I've been starting to clip her toenails. Plus, no matter how many times I say the word stop or no, and she knows what they both mean, she climbs up my leg.
Oh, boy.
Well, here we go. And how long have you had this kitten? She's 3 months of age now. How long have you had her?
Since the day she was born.
Literally since the day she was born?
Yep.
And was she with her litter mates, and was she with her mother, or was she orphaned?
Nope, she was with her family, and her mother decided to disappear when she was 9 weeks old. And okay. A week later, I got rid of the other two kittens. I took them someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And she was not happy about that. She used me for a toilet that day.
And she's using you for a toilet, and she's using you for a litter mate as well. And when you described...
Would that be why she has started coming up and to my arm, and she sucks on it, and she needs it too. And she was never forced away from her mother early.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, for mom to leave around 9 weeks of age is kind of right on schedule. That's not in the least bit unusual. But when you describe a cat with such aggressive behavior, you know, we can kind of plug and play a discussion we had with previous cats. Environment is a very big deal. Litter boxes, vertical space, climbing spaces, hides, as is engagement. And cats will play hide and seek. Cats will sit. Cats will stay. Cats will play fetch. The one thing that we encourage people to budget is if they choose to play with their cats with a laser light, please don't do that extensively. I liken that to going fishing with a naked hook and no bait and never even getting a bite, because the cat chases that laser light and they never get to catch anything. So what we encourage people to do is bring on toys that are about the size, length, and weight of your kitten, and engage them in lots and lots of active play. All kinds of feather toys and string toys and actively interactive things. And then you have to rotate them, because, you know, we wouldn't want to play with the exact same toy all day, every day, and neither do they. So these cats can be, as you say, a ball of energy. And of course, the next thing is, you're at 3 months of age now, just make sure that you get spayed or neutered at or near 6 months of age.
Yeah, there you go. Mary, thank you so much for calling. Cal in Sugar Camp called to say she keeps her cats away from her birds, you know, based from that earlier call, keeps the cats away from the birds by using deer fencing material around her feeder, making sure to curl the top out. So that's what she does to keep the cats away from the birds. And on that note, Bill, we're out of time. Thank you so much. It really flew by. I really appreciate it. I hope you'll be back with us again.
Sure. Sounds good.
Dr. Bill Stork owns and operates Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. He works with small and large animals. It's always great to have him with us, and I'm sure he'll be back, and at least I'm hoping you'll be back, and we'll do this all over again. Looking ahead to tomorrow, looking forward to this, Tom Wilmoth is back with his bag full of Christmas music. Many you've probably not heard before. That's Wednesday at 11 on the Ideas Network. And then on Friday, don't forget, Santa Claus comes by. So if you've got a youngster or a grandchild, have them call and talk with Santa about what they want for Christmas. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.